Pushkin.
You can find inspiring stories almost anywhere. For instance, check out the co-founders of Girls Who Do Interiors. This Miami-based design company was started by three friends when they were still in school. And right from the start, they turned to Chase for Business for everything from banking and payment acceptance to credit cards. And they handle them all in one place with the Chase mobile app. It's so important to have that kind of help when you're just starting out. Learn more at chaseforbusiness.com. Make more of what's yours. Chase mobile app is available for select mobile devices. Message and data rates may apply. JPMorgan Chase Bank, N.A. member FDIC. The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a place in our world where the paper ballots go. A ballot box. Somewhere, I hope. Welcome to The Last Archive, special election edition. I'm Jill Lepore. How will we know the results of the 2020 election? And when? Last year on The Last Archive, we did a whole episode about the prediction of election results and how all that changed in 1952. Turn back the hands of your clock and go listen to that episode. It's the fifth one, Project X. When I was reporting it, I telephoned the wonderful, delightful Bob Schieffer to ask him about calling elections on election night. Schieffer, who's now retired, was for a very long time the host of CBS's Face the Nation. The interview didn't really fit in the episode, but it's haunted me ever since. This election season, Twitter's announced that it's going to slow the flow of information. Not so fast, people keep saying, about this year's voting. So one question keeps nagging me. How did we get so caught up in a fetish for speed in the first place? Honestly, what's the hurry?
My daughters used to always ask me, say, Dad, did you want to be a TV reporter when you were a little boy? And they didn't have TV when I was a little boy.
Yeah.
Come to Fort Worth until the eighth grade. And I remember very well, we were going out to eat one night, and we had this Mexican restaurant we always went to. And we got out, there was an appliance store next door to the restaurant, and we there was a little TV in the window, and they had it on. And I remember that's the first time I'd ever seen TV, and I was just mesmerized by it. And my dad said, come on, I'm hungry. I don't have time to watch that. So that was my introduction to television.
Wow. And did your family watch the news when you're in high school?
Oh, absolutely. We always watch the news. And for some reason, and I don't really know why, I guess we watched CBS, although the local affiliate in Fort Worth was an NBC station. But my mother, once Walter Cronkite came along and all of that, she really liked Walter. And so we kind of grew up with Huntley and Brinkley and Walter Cronkite.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I had forgotten. I was watching the 1952 coverage, so it's Cronkite and Murrow and then Charles Collingwood. I had forgotten how kind of dashing and debonair Cronkite was in the 50s.
Yeah, well, and he had a mustache, which not many people on television journalists had in those days, but he was very urban, you know, and he'd been to World War II and, you know, he had been, you know, a foreign correspondent. And so he'd been around by that time. And
yeah.
A lot of people said that, you know, if Walter walked into a television station today and applied for a job, he wouldn't get hired because he didn't look like a reporter.
But no, that's really interesting.
And he had that, you know, that cadence in his voice, the sole correspondent. And, you know, and nobody talks like that anymore.
Yeah.
But Walter really did talk like that. And he talked like that off camera as well as on camera.
Yeah. Wow. So trying to grapple here what the consequences are of the kind of explosion of information available to news broadcasters and reporters around elections that really, you know, this is kind of watershed moment in 52 when CBS decides to try to predict the election the very night using the returns as they're coming in that can be calculated with a UNIVAC. CBS announced that they would be giving the fastest election prediction ever given and that they would call the election before anyone else could call it. Because in 52, the worry was like, if they made a prediction, it would be wrong. But if they didn't make a prediction, no one would watch. And so they bring in this machine to grant legitimacy to their prediction. But then maybe they lead us into a different kind of political trouble. So I would just love to hear your vantage about what it means to bring in computer and what we would now call, you know, big data into the newsroom on an election night.
You know, at CBS, when we would talk about those early days, the thing that always surprised us is they brought in this computer, and then when they got the results from the computer, they didn't believe it. They didn't know if it was true or not, and they were hesitant about reporting it. They held the information for a while, but the coming of the computers changed everything about election night. I mean, in our romantic rearview mirror, we look back and think about election nights when the family gathered around the radio and, you know, they put on an extra cup of coffee and then they waited and waited for the returns to come in. And it was a lot of fun. And in a funny kind of way, among other things, the computer sort of took the fun out of election night and changed it completely. I mean, you think back to, you know, back when Woodrow Wilson in 1916, he went to bed thinking he had lost the presidency. And it was not till 4 days later that he found out that he had won. And then down through the years, that began, you know, to speed up a little bit. But with the coming of computers, it really changed everything. And some people thought that was very unfair. They didn't like the idea they were going to find out in an hour or so who won the election. But in some cases, that was exactly what happened.
And so when you had those conversations, did anyone, I mean, aside from sort of looking backward with a little bit of wistfulness, did anybody ever say, well, here's a way we shouldn't be using them? Or were you at the table for some of those conversations over the years?
You know, from the coming of the computers, from the coming of all technological advances, you know, the one thing about communications that is constant is it's always changing. And as we have seen over the years, it always gets faster. And the use of computers is like we always do with new technology. And that goes all the way back to the invention of the machine gun. And you think about how many people died before the generals understood that the way to attack a machine gun is not to march your troops head on into machine gun fire. You kind of go around to the side. And just like now, we're grappling with what to do with digital and all of that. And, you know, we thought this was going to end all the problems and just make things faster. But we didn't understand the downside of these new technological advances. You think Facebook knew what the downside of what Zuckerberg had, you know, put on the market there? I'm sure he didn't, nor did anyone else. But we always, and it's understandable, but we always use technology before we completely understand it. And that was absolutely the case with the coming computers to election night.
So what are aside from taking the fun out of election night, what are the other consequences, do you think, for coverage or for how the elections themselves go?
Well, the computers do make mistakes. And I mean, the technology is sometimes wrong. I mean, and what I always think about on election night, the first thing when people talk about computers and things like that is in 1980, NBC called Ronald Reagan the winner at 8:15 on election night. It was such a huge landslide over Jimmy Carter. And Carter formally conceded at 10 o'clock before the polls had even closed in the West. And Democrats were absolutely furious. Two Democrats, Al Ullman and James Corman, publicly blamed Carter for their defeats out there. Whether that was the cause or not, they actually said it was his fault. Senator Warren Magnuson was also defeated. Because all these many races in the Western time zone had been affected by Carter's concession. House Speaker Tip O'Neill was so furious, he exploded in a conversation with a Carter aide telling him, "You jerks came in like a bunch of jerks, and you're going out the same way." He was just absolutely furious. And Washington State Congressman Tom Foley said it was vintage Carter at his dead worst. And, you know, that we began to think about then, well, wait a minute here. We've got the ability to do this, and the landslide was so overwhelming. There just wasn't much question about whether it was right or not. It was right, but the impact was something that nobody had really thought very much about until that time.
And would that happen now? I mean, would people call a national election before the local contests had been decided?
Well, I think it would depend. We instituted rules somewhere back that we never called a state until the polls had closed in that state. If you had a situation where would you call it before 11 o'clock, I think that's an open question. If it was a huge and overwhelming landslide, I think it would be very difficult not to call it early in a presidential race. But generally, we have tried not to do that.
And would people ever, I mean, trying to think about the different role that the kinds of computers that are available now to newsrooms would have. You know, that first UNIVAC is this clunky thing. Mm-hmm. And as you say, you know, CBS didn't even believe its prediction, didn't report on it initially. But you could know pretty early in a day on election day how things are looking because of computational models that your computer would be able to, kind of 538, you know, I don't know, it's sort of the magical work of computer modeling that could be done early on. Does that influence, do you think, how the coverage unfolds over the course of the day?
Oh, absolutely. And a lot of times, you know, early on, we'll go in and we'll get, our pollsters will tell us, like at CBS, you know, it looks like, you know, somebody's going to carry Virginia. Or it looks like somebody's going to, you know, it. But we're not going to call that. And so we will, the closest we'll come to that is we'll say, you know, it's leaning or something like that. But we simply don't call any of those early poll closing results until the polls in that section have actually closed. But the other thing, Jill, is the polls are just not as reliable as they once were. Even the exit polling, where people now tend to sometimes not tell the pollsters. And what exit polling is we just hire people to go out and stand outside the polls and ask people how they voted. Well, some years back, when that first happened, people were happy to do it. But now they sometimes lie to the people. They don't tell the truth, or they just simply won't talk to them because they're such we're in such a partisan like atmosphere right now.
I mean, what computers are doing on election day for a newsroom is making more information available more quickly and detecting patterns that would be hard for people working with pen and paper to detect. So at some level, what we're talking about is better evidence and more data and better information and more astute analysis. And you would intuitively think, well, better evidence, more information, more astute analysis, even kind of bracketing for a question the unreliability of polling data, but just thinking about other forms of data that the computer would have, the returns from previous elections, the kind of dog and pony show that, you know, on CNN when they have the hologram and they can make a 3D interactive electoral map and we suddenly can look at patterns over the last four presidential elections and we can look at these county by county bits of information, that it is a tremendous amount of evidence that is presented to us. And in a democracy, we're supposed to be informed. Is there a version of the influence of computers on election day reporting that is a good story, that is about improvements to our civic participation or our commitment to democratic institutions? I think we can both point to all the things that are kind of decaying around this, but what's the good side?
Well, the good side is that this information is still valuable, but I mean, it's all part of this new world that we live in because we've undergone this communication revolution that goes beyond just computers. I mean, the whole coming of the internet. We have more information available to us than any people who've ever lived on Earth at any one time in the history of the world. But does anyone think we're wiser, or are we simply overwhelmed with so much information that we can't process it? And my feeling is we're overwhelmed. We're still working our way through this. We're still trying to figure all this out. And it has had an impact on the credibility of news organizations. And we find it's more difficult for people to believe anything now. And so the credibility of all news organizations every day of the year is not what it once was, just simply because we're just being drowned in more information than we can possibly process. And I think this is all part of that.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely the case. But we, I think, do tend to still want to believe that data does mean wisdom.
Well, it does. I mean, you're absolutely right. It does add to more information. But, you know, Martin Luther thought the invention of the printing press was going to make everything just fine, that once people could read the Bible in their own language, that all of the problems and controversies they had would all be worked out. But after the invention of the printing press, we had 30 years of religious wars. It wasn't suddenly everybody all at once began to agree on things. And I think the coming of the internet is having as profound an impact on our culture and Western culture as the invention of the printing press had on the people of its day.
Yeah. Although the inventing of the printing press makes possible the rise of modern democracy.
Absolutely.
So what does the invention of the internet make possible?
Confusion. I think on the downside, there's no question we can get more information faster than at any time in the history of the world. But just because we get it faster does not necessarily mean that it's going to work out all the problems. There are still just this myriad of problems that have to be resolved. But we're getting there. But, you know, we just kind of haven't reached equilibrium yet. And the coming of the internet and the use of computers on election night is just all part of that.
Yeah, my husband's a computer scientist at MIT, and I was asking him yesterday to give me some kind of a rule of thumb about the processing, the capacity of a computer of the 1950s relative to today. And I was sitting, of course, with my laptop, my Mac in my lap. And he said, well, one measure would be you have more memory on your Mac sitting right here in this room than all the computer storage in the entire world in 1960. So Yeah, just in terms of the storage of data, not even being connected to the internet, just what was on my hard drive. So if you were given the task of coming up with a plan for election day, election night coverage for 2020, what would be a priority for you?
Well, just to improve the accuracy and to, I think the secret is it's not so much the use of the computers, but the use of polling and finding polling. Polling is not more reliable. It's one of the things that is not improved. Polling has gotten worse, not better. And we're seeing that now. On election night as much as any other time. And finding a way to get polls that were as accurate as we used to have when, you know, we'd do a national poll at CBS and we'd call, you know, 5,000 people to get 1,500 people. Well, now we have to call 30 or 40,000 to get 1,500 people. And even so, you wonder who are the people that you're talking to when you do a poll like that. And I think that's where the improvement can come. And that's the part we have to work on. And it's also the reason we have to be extremely careful. I mean, more careful than we've ever been before we broadcast anything, because as you now know, I mean, once information gets out now, you know, Mark Twain, what was it he said? That a lie can go around the world while the truth is still putting its pants on. And that's where we are right now. I mean, what we're going through now in just the reporting of the news is it's not that people have always made mistakes. There have always been partisan people that are trying to put out false stories. But the difference now is how quickly it gets to the public. And, you know, we all have to spend time now just sorting out, where did this come from? Is it true? How do they know that? And that's what we've got to work on. But we also have got to be very careful in what we report.
You know, historians talk a lot about this 1952 CBS election night. And it doesn't sound like it's a vivid memory for you as a kid, but is it something that within CBS people talk about or there are stories about that?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, elections and how we cover them is always, it's always a topic, the topic around CBS News. And, you know, political conventions, election years, people plan their careers around those big events. At least they did. They were still doing it in my day when I was out there covering campaigns and stuff. So you're always trying to figure out, and what you're always trying to figure out is how can you get the information before the other guys do, which is what, you know, one of the main things that journalism is about. And I think sometimes we spent more time thinking about how can we get the news first than we did about what is the impact of the information we're getting. One thing we thought in 2000 that election night was going to go back to being an old-fashioned election night. We were going into that election. We knew it was going to be very close, Gore versus Bush. And I remember on the night before election night, I told Ann Rather, I said, we are, and I said this on television, I said, we're going to have an old-fashioned election night. We may be up all night before we know who wins this thing. Well, under the heading of be careful what you wish for. You know what happened. It was December 11th before we found out who, or 12th, I guess it was, before we found out who won that election. And it was one of the worst nights CBS ever had. You know, we called Florida for Gore at 7:40 that night. We recalled it at 10 o'clock. Gore conceded. Then he took it back. Then CBS called Florida for Bush at 2 a.m. And then we had to take that back at 4 a.m. So we got an old-fashioned election, all right. But it was something none of us had anticipated. But it's one of those nights I'll always remember.
Yeah. I remember that night too, because I think it was one of the few nights I went to bed before it was resolved. I don't know that there's been another one. The desire somehow to have it all settled before you turn out the nightlight is a very strong one. From the other side, not being the journalist trying to get the news first, but being the listener and the viewer trying to find it out so I could just go to bed. I'm appreciating the speed and other reasons.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
This election night, don't stay up late. Go to bed. The counting will take a while. 2020, the year of slow voting. Good luck staying sane and catching up on sleep. And we'll be back in the spring with a new season of The Last Archive about the rise of doubt, psychological warfare, hoaxes, conspiracy theories, Russian misinformation, fake pandemics, and maybe, but I hope not, disputed elections. You won't believe what we've uncovered. I mean, you should believe it, but people don't believe anything anymore. Next season, believe it or not.
Hi, Last Archive listeners. I want to tell you about another podcast to add to your queue, The Jordan Harbinger Show. Jordan's podcast is aimed at making you a better informed critical thinker so you can come to your own conclusions about what's happening in the world. He dives into the minds of fascinating people, from authors and activists to mobsters, spies, and hostage negotiators. You might enjoy Jordan's interview with Yuval Noah Harari, the author of Sapiens, A Brief History of Humankind, or his recent deep dive into modern flat earth theory and why some still believe the earth is flat despite thousands of years of evidence to the contrary. Whether Jordan is conducting an interview or giving advice to a listener, you'll find something useful you can apply to your own life in every episode of The Jordan Harbinger Show, whether it's asking for advice the right way or discovering a slight mindset tweak that changes how you see the world. Search for The Jordan Harbinger Show, that's H-A-R-B-I-N-G-E-R, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you listen to podcasts.